This is the Aftermarket Radio Network. Hey, what's the real reason why you became a business owner? Did you want to be your own boss? Have a flexible schedule? Were you certain you could do things better? It's Carm here, the pioneer of Automotive Aftermarket Podcast. My guest, Murray Voth, explains there's an entrepreneurial fizz with so many technicians becoming business owners. But changing your mindset from tech to business owner doesn't come easy or naturally. Hey, thanks to our partner, NAPA, for providing this episode. You know, it's no secret we're facing a technician shortage, and NAPA Auto Care is addressing that. The free two-year apprentice program offers a variety of training to produce a technician with three ASE certifications. To learn more, members can visit member.napaautocare.com. Hey, everyone. Always honored to have Murray Voth, RPM Training, on the show. Hello, Murray.
Hey, Carm. Good to see you.
You're my favorite Canadian coach.
I'm glad to hear that.
Can I say that? I think I can.
Yeah.
So here's the deal. We did a Town Hall Academy recently with Murray and two other coaches. It was Chris Cotton and Brian Gillis, all from the Camp Coaching Organization Association. We were all done, Murray. And my daughter Tracy said, "Wow, Murray's smart."
Oh, she did, didn't she?
Yeah, you know, she's my producer, my content manager. She was, of course, pulling all the switches on the back end of the show. And so we were all done, and we were talking that afternoon. She goes, "Well, Murray, everybody did a great job." And we, you know, Chris has got a podcast in the Aftermarket Radio Network, and Brian, they all did a great job. But I don't know why. Tracy, did you send her some money? Did you?
No. I'm thinking to myself, she should talk to my kids because I want to hear that from them.
That's so good. So. Where did I get this changing mindset, Murray? Was I watching you do something? Was it the title of a webinar you did? Where did I get that?
I think we were in a camp coalition meeting. We were all chatting about topics and challenges. I think we were talking about why we can't get more people to take coaching and training. I think as coaches, we talk about that challenge. And I think I just went off the deep end on a rant on mindset, I think is probably what happened.
I think you did. And so because I listen so intently and I'm always looking to say, maybe that needs to go further, right? So I pick up the phone or the email and I said, "Murray, that whole changing mindset, you're right, it was a rant." I said, "You got to come on and we got to do something." And, you know, it's always good to have a guy like Murray who's been there and done that service station. I mean, you had a great empire at one point in time. And so you've taken that lifetime of wisdom, of learning, of insights, and you put it smartly into a great coaching company. So we're here to steal some of that brain power.
Yeah, sure. And to really give credit to other people in my life. I mean, I was a client of Bob O'Connor 11 years. And, you know, one of my first meetings with him, we talked about parts margin. And this was, you know, pretty early computer days. And he said, "It's just about a pencil and a mindset change." You know, I now use the expression, it's a keyboard stroke and a mindset change. And so I have very distinct memories of mindset changes in my life and business, like significant milestones, right? So I bring that to what I do. I have memories of the pain of making change, and then that'll be like, oh, that's a topic to talk about, right?
So can you look back, Murray, and say that every decade was something new and different for you?
Yeah. Decade, every 5 years, 7 years, I don't know.
I kept thinking about the decades of change and what I was doing. And I always, I can't quite say that I've ever done anything with a concreted mindset. I knew it had to change. I knew I had to be wide-eyed, bushy-tailed, and open. And I think when you're like that, significant change happens not only in your life and in your family, the world around you, but it happens in your ability to create wealth. Going from a technician to becoming a business person is, frankly, just like making, you know, wine out of water. Sometimes it's not easy.
The challenge with that is I always want to respect everybody's intentions. I ask them, "What was your intention?" "Well, I wanted to be my own boss." Okay, good. I wanted to make more money because I was working for somebody else. Great. I wanted to have more flexibility with my time. These are honorable intentions, right? So then what I do is 2, 3, 5, 6, 7 years in, I say, how's that going? And they say, well, the business owns me. I have no flexibility. I have less money now. I have more stress. And I hate my boss. I look at him in the mirror every morning, right? So I always start with the intentions are honorable. The intentions are good, right? I don't want people to feel like I'm criticizing or critiquing what they set out to do. That would be one important sort of thing that I want to bring to the conversation in terms of preparing somebody for mindset. The other one is we all have our natural leanings, tendencies, skills, knowledge, personality pieces. So people who repair cars, they generally like that. They're problem solvers. They're rewarded by that feeling. I mean, the joke in other contexts is you give somebody a hammer, they keep looking for nails to hit, right? Like, so as a technician, okay, so I'm working for somebody fixing cars. So I think, well, what I'm going to do is I'm going to fix cars for other people and they're going to pay me. And I'm really going to enjoy this because I love fixing cars. And then again, 6 months, 8 months, a year, 2 years into it, I'm like, oh, I'm not even enjoying fixing cars anymore, right? Because of that part of it. So again, I want to challenge people. You do have natural skills and abilities and stuff like that. But I think what's happened to all of us as humans is our identities get tied to that. And because our identity is that, we have a hard time changing what that identity is, right? And that's extremely personal. So again, when you challenge a technician owner, become owner to think about some things, to take coaching, training, to make these changes in their business, some of them react negatively or push back because they're feeling somehow that you're criticizing who they are by suggesting change, right? And again, I try to work really hard at getting past that or behind that and see if I can empathize with those people. So, and again, here's the other part. Let's face this reality before we dig into these 4 points here, is some of us should not go into business. We're way better working with and or for someone and providing value and getting a good salary and having a good life. And guess what? Work ends at 6 that day and I can go home on the weekend, right? There's nothing wrong with that. This entrepreneurial, I'm going to say fizz, but this entrepreneurial seizures that everybody's having in North America, everybody's going to be an entrepreneur. Like, I think we got to wake up a little bit and go, you know what? I'm not cut out to be this. And it's okay. And it's okay.
I love what you said just a few moments ago. Respect their intentions, Murray, because I want to start with these great bullet points you brought. Respect their intentions. So if more money was one of them, for example, I guess you could say to that person, well, how's that going? That would probably open up, hopefully, the openness and the coaching dialogue, because I know you believe in starting with the end in mind. But how do you get someone who wanted more money and it's not going well for them to really think way down the road?
That is hard. We as human beings, pretty much our brains live day to day. I read recently that human culture counted to 5 and then lots for thousands of years. It's only a recent phenomenon that we as human beings went past 10 and 100 and 1,000 and a trillion. There are still cultures today that go 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 and a whole lot more. So I think what your daughter is referring to is not, I'm smart, I'm just a nerd.
I love that.
I'm a fact fiend or whatever, right?
Do you have massive recall?
I used to. It is diminishing slightly every year as I get older or the pressures of life go on. But I used to have close to photographic till I was 50.
Good for you. Well, all right. So yeah, starting with the end in mind, let's talk about that.
All of us can learn from this, whether we're a technician, a service advisor, an owner. You know, I want to have a career. I want to enjoy what I do. I want to serve. And I want to make money. And I want to. And again, the word retirement is this another thing that hangs over all of us. Like, we're going to get old and stop working. Do we have enough money to do that? But the whole idea being is that my efforts should go into this. Money will come out of it. I can store some of that money aside, and then I have choices to make with that money. Right. So the end in mind. So wealth, I think, is a positive term. Right. It's not greed. It's not profit. We're generating wealth, and then generating wealth creates a legacy. It gives us choices. It gives our family choices. you know, we have children, we have three children, the idea that they can choose to be a trade, one of them has, or choose to go to university, one of them has, and have money to help them with tuition, or one of them goes to business school and having money to help our children, right, is wealth, right? It's not necessarily the assumption that we're a millionaire or a billionaire, but we have wealth in terms of what we can offer our families and those around us, that right, and even our employees. So the idea is to sit down and make a plan. Now, people talk about a business plan. I'm sure, Carmen, in your career, you've done business plans for investors or for a bank. Well, that's like the most boring exercise on the planet, in my mind.
I didn't mind creating business plans. I really didn't. I thought because it allowed my mind to get together and think down the road.
You probably did the good kind of business plan, because there's two kinds of business plan. The kind you're talking about that are fun, where we create the path, we think about the possibilities and we create it. Or there's the one that we create because the bank is asking us to create it, and it's just full of lies.
Because I'm trying to bail myself out or borrow money that I really can't afford. So they really want something concrete and I can't make concrete.
Or even if I'm just opening my business for the first time and I need to go to the bank and they want a business plan and they've given me this form and I don't understand how that form works. And they want, you know, traffic counts and they want these. And a lot of business plans that banks want are all suppositions, right? If this happens, then that'll happen. If that happens, then that'll happen. And that's the part that I found frustrating and found boring. I, on the other hand, learned some years ago to forecast from the bottom up. Every one of my coaching clients, we set a net profit target. We go backwards from the net profit to the gross. We go backwards from the gross, we get the expenses out of it. We go backwards to that to the sales, all right? Then we put that number into a spreadsheet, a composite, and we look at what are the sold hours per work order going to be? What are the sold hours per tech going to be? What are the margins on this going to be? What are these? And we only look, you know, we have dozens of them if we want to, but we, you know, there's five or six key KPIs that we look at. And then we tweak this, we tweak that, we tweak that. Oh, okay. So if we tweak sold hours per work order by 0.2, parts margin by 2%, oh, look at that. We're going to make our net. And then we lock that into place, break it out monthly, seasonalize to their seasonality, because we have these swings, right? Quieter times of the year. And that's the forecast. But here's the thing. Even though we forecasted the net of, let's say, $100,000, $150,000 that year, what my clients watch every month is the things they have control over. Sold hours per work order. How do you control sold hours per work order? Well, there's at least a good dozen things there. How's my inspection process going? Or how's my service advisor estimating going? How's my presentation skill going, right? And so the idea that I get so excited about, Carmen, is that human beings can change behavior. We can do better at inspections. We can do better. Even digital, like the DVI world is just exploding, right? There's studies done that just editing the photo with an arrow or a circle, sales go up by 20%. So the thing is I circle back from that net to the all the way to the behavior change. And then we see, do we accomplish this? And then you're guaranteed to have that net. This idea of forecasting sales is ridiculous because there are so many factors that you don't have control that control that part of it.
You know, I've always said you can forecast sales, but if you're not managing margin, if you're not managing expenses, you'll never have a bottom line that gives you a comfortable enough living.
Our industry is beautiful in the sense that there are so many controllables that give you the net that you need. We have way more than a lot of other industries. Like somebody who sells automotive parts, yeah, they've had a couple of controllables, but they're basically based on relationships and volume and, right? But a shop's got inspection processes. We've got charging for testing. We have got technician efficiency. We have got technician productivity. We have service advisor to technician ratio. We have technician to bay ratio. All of those things, when you look at them, analyze them, tweak them, work at them, all make the net profit better. And they're things that a technician understands. Carm, I just got it. I just got it. I get as excited as you sometimes. I watch my clients use a scan tool, a factory laptop scan tool hooked up to a Lexus. And they're going in there and they're figuring it out. They can do it. They're smart, intelligent people. I show them numbers and their brains freeze. Or I show them how to use Google Docs or how to use Google My Business and their brains go into seizure. And then I realize if they can adapt the skills that they have to that, and I keep looking for analogies And little by little, the most techie of them go, well, yeah, if I can do that, I can do this, right? All of us as humans need that ability to understand that we can transfer skills, transferability. Is it always successful? Depends on how automotive that mindset is. Like sometimes I just, hey, you're just going to be a technician your whole life. So then hire a manager, hire an advisor, hire a financial planner, and then you just go in the back and work on cars. Like seriously, I've got a couple that's the decision that they've had to make. But lots of them have been able to transfer that skill and go, hey, my business is just like a car, right? I've got gross profit. I've got expenses are weight. I've got horsepower. I've got drag. I got coefficients, right? I can figure this out.
Hey, Carm here. Now coming up, Murray explains how to soar when facing a situation. Hey, it's no secret. We're facing a technician shortage, and Napa Auto Care has a solution with the Napa Auto Care Apprentice Program. The program was pioneered by one of our own. Pete McNeil and Master Technician Jake Sorensen from McNeil's Auto Care in Sandy, Utah, realized that the problem of not having technicians available for hire was not going to solve itself and decided to take action and look at a different audience of individuals available for hire. A focus was put on younger individuals with the right passion, desire, and attitude to work in the automotive repair industry. Jake and Pete sought after these individuals and developed a technician apprentice program to give them the training needed to become a successful technician in today's world. The Napa Auto Care Apprentice Program includes a comprehensive 9-stage curriculum that includes a variety of types of training, and they are classroom training videos exclusive to the apprentice program. Now, these videos provide in-depth training from a successful master technician. Also, AutoTech classes with instructor-led courses offered through Napa AutoTech and AutoTech e-learning. This web-based e-learning is designed to target specific training topics. And finally, hands-on learning. The apprentice will apply the skills gained from the classroom training videos, AutoTech instructor-led training, and AutoTech e-learnings in the shop with the guidance of a mentor. The apprentice program curriculum is competency-based, meaning an apprentice can move through each stage at a pace that best suits them. Most apprentices complete the program within 2 years. Upon completion, apprentices will have earned ASE G1, A4, A5, and AC certifications, adding industry validation to the skills an apprentice acquires. Look, having an apprentice in your shop will ultimately benefit your bottom line as they advance through the program. And in most cases, as the apprentice develops their skill set producing billable hours, you'll begin to see a growth in your gross profit by stage 5. One of the largest barriers to entry for individuals looking to enter the automotive repair industry is the cost of tools. Now, keep your apprentice motivated with an apprentice toolkit. Now, Napa Auto Care has worked with our supplying partners to offer an exclusive comprehensive tool set, including a 4-drawer tool cart for all registered apprentices. Hey, to learn more, members can visit member.napaautocare.com. Basically, what Murray is saying is, what's the net profit we've got to make? For example, if you had $1.2 million business and you're telling somebody, come on, you got to make 10 or 12% out of this thing, then let's start with that, if you will, in the forecast and back up. It's brilliant. I mean, I know there's a lot of people that do that, but it may be for a struggling shop who wants to break out of the grip of struggle. This may be the freshest, newest, neatest way to proceed. When I love to talk to struggling shops, I always say, you don't have to do this alone. There's guys like Murray, there's 20 groups, there's networking groups that, and you probably can even find it on Google, but back into it, back into what we've got to sell every day.
One of my clients who just sold his business, and I feel very proud to have been walked alongside him, I mentioned him in our lab there, was just down in Daytona 500. His supplier gave him a retirement trip to watch the race, Daytona, and was down there with 43 other Canadians with that supplier. 7 or 8 of them are my clients. And they grabbed a bunch of shop owners and said, you have to go talk to a coach at Daytona 500. That's the stuff we're talking about. I have a brand new contact on my phone from lunch yesterday with my friend and the shop owner that is looking for this kind of, I'm so excited to reach out to him because he was eating it all up. Whatever these guys were telling him, he was just eating it up.
You know how passionate I am about advancing the aftermarket and having gotten to know so many incredible coaches and top shop operators that are willing, willing to help. They're constantly learning, and that's one of the traits that they say, I never want to be the smartest kid in the room. I always want to be learning. And again, part of the discussion that we had on that the academy that was on Struggling Shops and so many of the other shows that I've done on ego is that you got to get your ego in check and say, okay, I raised my hand. I don't know. It's better to say, I don't know. I'll find out an answer than to hide behind what you think you know because you don't.
You know, Carm, we went down a bit of a rabbit hole with dyslexia in that session, but there's another rabbit hole I want to expose on that topic of ego with generally male technician turned owners. Many technicians through their career from young on have been challenged by their advisors, by their bosses, their owners, and by the consumer. And they've gotten so tired of the brakes are at 230 seconds. You need a new set of brakes. Advisor says, yeah, this guy's kind of broke. Do you think he can drive it for another 2 weeks? And the technician goes, no, it's going to fail. It's going to fail a state inspection. Well, the guy, no. And then the owner, you know, he's doing some other stuff like that. And the owner comes by and says, you know what? Just reuse that. Just reuse that seal. Come on, boss. Like, seriously, it's probably going to come back leaking. Well, no, this guy's kind of broke and or I can't get the seal. So just And so these technicians have been asked to compromise their standards. They've been challenged by bosses, coworkers, advisors on their opinion. And so guess what ends up happening? You get defensive. You put up walls and an ego. A lot of ego is not this bad ego. My ego is too big I'm too big for my britches, that kind of thing. Yeah, that stuff exists out there. There's human beings that like. But seriously, I think a lot of these technicians have gotten so defensive. They're so tired of being challenged that they've created these egos. And so then they bring that same habit when they become owners. They bring that same habit into a room with a coach, a trainer, or another shop owner that says, you know, could you think about it? Now, I keep looking for better ways to phrase that question, to phrase that statement. But you know what, Carm, at the end of the day, sometimes it just is what it is. And we have to stand up to each other and stand up to this person and say, dude, you're going to go broke. Like, seriously, you've got to stop. I don't know, you know, why you're so offended by what I'm saying is, but you do have to face this. But I do find is if I can get past that defensiveness of why they're protecting themselves, then we can have a conversation. Then it opens up, right? You know, they've been beat up so long.
Wonderful. Great, wise words. We've done a show or a couple of shows on selling from your own wallet. And, you know, and that's one of the big problems that I just heard you say is, you know, they can't afford it. Well, how would you put something that isn't safe and reliable on the road knowing that it could even cost this person more? I mean, if you don't tell them what you've found, you're doing an injustice to a relationship. Now, let's talk about the customer service, you know, the client experience.
I mentioned, you know, a few moments ago about we go into business and we think it's all about price, right? We see coupons out there. We think the way to get more business is to drop our price because that's apparently how grocery stores do it. And we don't understand that retail world has a strategy, right? When you go into a large department store that says we have, you know, huge sale on blue jeans today, half price, that kind of stuff. We go, wow, this place has a lot of cheap jeans. We don't realize that they just bumped up 40, 50 other items by 10%, right, on their pricing structure. We don't realize that behind the scenes, we've just gotten fooled into buying cheap jeans and then buying seven other things while we're there and actually paid 10% more because that's how that retail world works. I like to think of this like an accounting firm, law firm, professionals who say, my time is worth this amount of money. It comes with this water pump or this timing belt or these brakes because that happens to be what your car needs. And this is what the price is going to be for me to give you the quality that you need, to give you the warranty that you need, and for me to stay in business here to back up everything that I've done here, right? And stand that ground and stand there, right? Now, of course, the industry has spiraled into this price cycle over and over again, but a lot of shops have just bypassed that because the clients, the driving public, is looking for a car experience. So let me just walk through a few really, really easy things. I'm driving up to your location and I can actually see how I can access your parking lot because it's not blocked with all kinds of used cars that you're trying to sell or old cars that didn't get paid for. So I can actually see the driveway. When I pull onto the driveway, I can actually see a couple of empty parking spots that are labeled client parking. I'm not driving around looking for parking, giving up and then leaving. So that's a very simple little thing, right? Let's just have some parking. When I walk into the business, it's neat, it's tidy, it's clean. It's maybe even as clean as a dentist office because I have nice business clothes on and I don't want to sit down in the greasy 57 Chevy seat that's been sat on by the mechanics for lunch. Somebody is friendly to me, right? But then let's modernize this. 60-something percent of people are searching for car repair maintenance on their phones. Do you have a website? Does your website have the phone number pop up at the top of the page on a phone? Is it hyperlinked? Can I tap that number and call you? Or is there a button that I can book an appointment with you? And believe it or not, Carm, it's not this accessing. See, a lot of shop owners will be, well, I don't want to have that on my website because I don't want people to access my scheduler. Well, no, that's not what we're talking about. Busy people want to go to your site or Google My Business because that's probably the listing they're going to use anyways. They're probably not even going to go to your website. They're going to go to the Google My Business listing when they do a search, right? And they're going to click on make an appointment. And they're not expecting to show up. Now, there's the oddball that does, but most people aren't expecting to show up at 9 o'clock for their brakes tomorrow. They're just really busy and they're going, my car, a brake noise, just give me a time. And then you get back to them and say, I've got Thursday at noon, does that work for you? Perfect. People just want it off their plate. They don't want to call you, be put on hold just to make an appointment.
We've done shows about the millennial attitudes to technology and customer service. And if you say that you can send me a text and what's your preferred method of communications and you say text and you pick up the phone and call them, they get pissed.
There must be something wrong with me because I'm a baby boomer and I actually get pissed. I have engaged, like there's a lot of our generation has embraced this technology and we're loving it because we are busy. We don't want to be called. Right. And Carm, I've got a friend. He's not a current client. He has taken training from me in the past. Brilliant, visionary shop owner. He's with another coach right now, which is brilliant. Like seriously, us coaches, you know, how we talk amongst each other, support each other. He, before the pandemic already, he bought 6 courtesy vehicles, hired a valet, and they pick up. So they go to the customer's client's home, pick up the car, drop off the courtesy vehicle. And then agree on a meeting point, could be at the shop, could be back at the home, could be somewhere else at a mall, meet the client and swap the vehicle back at the end of the day. Now, shop owners, a lot of shop owners say, well, I can't afford courtesy cars. My insurance is going to go up $3,000. And the valet person, how much, you know, what are you going to get? Minimum wage. And all they complain about is the cost, as opposed to Peter goes, this business model is costing me an extra $1,500 a month or whatever the number is. My gross profit has to go up by this amount. I need this much more sales or I need to raise my rates or I'm going to add a buffer to my estimates, 10% to cover this cost. And away they go. And guess what's happening? These people are just eating it up because it's not about the price of the brake job. It's about the fact that they were able to generate revenue themselves with their jobs, right? Like my home, like I'm in my home office, obviously here. I would love it if somebody would do that with my truck out there. Who cares if it's 10% more, 20% more? And the thing is, that's the mindset. You see, a lot of us automotive types come from a blue-collar homes, blue-collar background. And this is not a criticism. There's a lot of pride in getting our hands dirty, right? Mike Rowe, dirty jobs, getting people into the trades. Like, I'm very passionate about that. But there's a mindset of the blue-collar person. I can do it myself, right? I can do my own brakes. I can do my own drywall. I can do my own electrical. I can do my own plumbing, right? Blue-collar car owners make the worst retail customers because what do they want to do? They want to bring their own parts because they know how to source them. And they only want to bring you the jobs they can't figure out. And how profitable is that? And so what ends up happening is shops instinctively attract whom? Themselves. They portray themselves in their marketing, if they do even do any marketing, and they attract more of them. You've heard me say this, Carm, to shop owners, how many of you have a rocket scientist, a brain surgeon, a ballet dancer, and the head of the Vancouver Symphony Orchestra violin section as a client, right? Now, I didn't have the ballet dancer. I did have 2 ballet teachers. And the rocket scientist, well, he worked on a nuclear program at the University of British Columbia, so maybe not, but he was the stereotypical rocket scientist. You know what I'm saying, right? So these people are professionals. They have good incomes. They have no clue about a car. All they want is reliability and just be fair to me. And that's all we're looking for. We need to attract. So that's when we talk about the client experience is it's not about price. Okay, is there a limit? Of course there's a limit, right? But most of us haven't even broached it.
There's always something way left and there's something always way right that could disprove anything that you're saying. But when you listen to it with an open mind, who can argue with this? We've done shows on loaner cars and the shop owners will tell you that the average ticket, I don't remember the number, is way higher than the person who doesn't get a loaner car. Okay. And so right there, there's a payback. And one of my big takeaways from what you just ranted about, and you're such a good ranter, by the way, was to sit down with, you know, clear your desk, put up some, you know, get the whiteboard going, bring in your key people and figure out the easy button for your customer, because that's what you just described to me. Listen, we'll drop this off. We'll pick you up. We'll do this. We'll do that. What? Yes, you can say yes, yes, yes to any convenience that the customer is looking for. Add it to your business model. Make that your easy button. And maybe that's a cool little graphic on the website. Click the easy button and it lists all these things that no one else does.
I got a new one for you, Carm, from one of my clients who eats this stuff up. He's an inspiration to me. You know how we should have a rule for our technicians and our apprentices and staff who drive our clients' vehicles that we do not touch the radio except to turn it off. We do not touch the seat controls unless we're too tall to drive the car safely. And we do not touch the mirrors unless it's going to be unsafe to drive, right? We do not touch that stuff. Now, how many people listening to this podcast have actually heard those three rules in their business and how angry the driving public gets when you touch those three things in their car and they have to spend the next hour getting that seat exactly where they love it. All right. Now, Chris has a form. They rarely move a seat. They never move mirrors. When occasionally they have to move a seat, they actually leave a form in the car stating, due to safe driving conditions, we did need to move the settings on your seat. We've tried to put it back where it was. Please let us know if we can help you when you pick up your car. They leave this on the seat of the car if they had to move the seat. Think about that care, how little that costs. But the fact that they're thinking about the client's experience of picking up their vehicle at the end of the day. As a shop owner, speaking back to mindset, because that's our topic today, I don't make enough money to actually buy a nice car so that I drive a vehicle that the seat controls don't work anymore, so I have a big pillow behind my back so I can actually reach the pedals. And that's just my life as a poor shop owner. I have no clue of the fact of the comfort level that people are experiencing and or experiencing. And here's the other part is we sometimes make fun of those people. Sissy bud and what a wimp. And we're worried about his seat. Oh, poor guy. I couldn't stand the radio station I put it on. I mean, that's the kind of stuff that I hear from automotive shop owners and technicians. Every once in a while, they complain about the client.
Then they don't deserve the client.
So here's another simplistic thing. After hours drop box system. I mean, they used to be called night owl, night drop. But here's the thing is it doesn't have to be night. You can actually create a system where people can drop their keys off at their convenience, even if it's during the day. And they can pick up their keys with some of those lock boxes with the combination locks on them, right? So one of my clients was really frustrated one day because he went to the night drop system and people hadn't used it correctly. They hadn't pushed it in. Like, you know, you pull it out, put the key in, push it in. And there was four sets of keys sitting there. He's like, really, people? This is kind of risky. And his first instinct, of course, was to go down that negative rabbit hole about how dumb these customers were and stuff like that. And he stopped himself and he went, you know what? I've never shown these people how to use it.
Learn. Every time you come up to a challenge, ask yourself why.
Why? So you know what he did? Got his phone, did a video. Hey, everybody, Steve here from whatever automotive. I don't know if you guys knew, but I have an after-hours key drop system. Let me show you where it is. Let me show how it works. And he posted it on Facebook and Twitter and Google and YouTube and just educated his clients about how his after-hours night system did. Big smile on his face, proud of this service that he's got, as opposed to going out there and, hey, you idiots, you know, look at how you use this dumb thing and stuff like that, right?
Oh, Murray, you're dropping all kinds of big, huge value coins here for us. Let's do your fourth point about developing team.
This is probably the most challenging, I'm going to say, but also the most rewarding. Some of us as humans have some natural tendencies to leadership just because of our backgrounds and that kind of stuff. Or like I'm a firstborn. So guess what? I'm the bossy older brother. my wife is also a firstborn. Somehow we've made it to 42 years together. But imagine my three children being parented by two firstborns. So some of us come naturally, some of us don't, and we have to learn those skills. But my wording in when I sent you this, Carm, is develop a team, which means a conscious effort to develop, takes time. Secondly, look after that team as if your life depended on it, because it does. Now, looking after a team, some shop owners will listen and say, yeah, so now you're getting to that touchy-feely, and I got to have benefits, and I got to give them that, and they're going to just run roughshod over me. And I'm like, no. And without being disrespectful, I always qualify these next comments. I said, you know, you're raising children? Yeah. Do your children misbehave sometimes? Yeah. Do you have to guide them and discipline them? Yeah. Do you still love them? Well, yeah. I said, employees are just children in big bodies. And I don't mean to say that disrespectful of the employee. I said, but we have to realize that we can love them and we can still have boundaries and standards and accountability and teach the rest of it.
They're children inside of a system.
Yeah, well said, Carm, well said.
And we may be able to get up and over our blockage of the employee, the negative employee attitude with that. Murray, compare them to your children. I love the concept. And you know what? What's wrong with feeding their families and letting them earn a decent living and giving them health care and benefits and help them set for a long life, a retirement plan? Isn't that what you would want? That, and if it's family, why wouldn't you want that for your family?
But because you can't do it for yourself, and because you are unable to do it for yourself, you look at them as taking food from your kids' mouths, as opposed to looking at it the other way around. This fellow that gave me that referral from Daytona that just sold his shop, I want you guys to know, I can't use names, but I want you guys to know that are listening, his advisors were all $75,000 and above salary, and he had technicians that were all six figures. One got $150,000, and he was profitable, and he sold the place for a nice retirement egg. And when I first met him, he was already had taken training and coaching from a lot of other guys. But he said, I wake up every morning trying to figure out how to get my people to make six figures. And I tell them that, and I also hold them accountable for that. And we have some really hard meetings about what you just did, and it was all team. What you just did affected the team, right? When you made that decision to skip that step, you just affected everybody's income today. Were you aware of that? So he comes with generosity, but he also comes with a really hard stare in front of the group saying, okay, guys, this is what happened. How are we going to fix this together?
Yeah, it's the accountability factor, Murray, because you let them in on the decisions. You want to make them, but you have to have a team that implements them.
The other thing on developing a team, there's quite a bit of stuff out there on this. When you're working with another person, right, regardless of whether employee, peer, coaching client, child, right, does the person have the knowledge to do what you're asking them to do? And this is kind of, I think, EOS. You guys do a lot of EOS stuff, which is some pretty cool stuff in there. I think EOS does work with this and does touch on it in terms of the right person, the right seat, that whole thing. But I have my own version of that. Do they have the knowledge? Do they have the ability to apply that knowledge? Do they have the capacity, which is, I think, probably I got that idea from EOS, right? Do they actually have the capacity to do that? And then do they have the desire? And generally, with most employees, the desire is the first thing an owner looks at. Oh, this person doesn't want to do that. But the desire is lacking or appears to be lacking because the person is too afraid to admit they don't know that, they don't know how to do that, or they physically can't or mentally can't do that, right? So we have to do that. And so let me give you a simple example that maybe, Carm, has been in one of our other episodes together, but is absolutely one of my favorites, all right? The prairies of Canada, balancing tires. They've got to be clean because if there's mud on those rims, that balancing is not going to work because that mud will fall off and they won't be balanced, right? So owner delegates to the technicians to train a new apprentice on balancing wheels, okay? And they have to be washed, okay? Week goes by, owner walks by the kid, wheels are dry, have not been washed. I mean, that's how he knew they weren't washed, right? Said to the kid, you didn't wash those. And the kid said, well, they look clean enough to me. And then the owner ranted to me that afternoon about common sense and blah, 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 all that kind of stuff. And I said, did you actually ask the kid if he knew why he was washing the rims? He said, well, no, he should. You'd think he would know that. So here's the thing, Carm. After my clients get to know me, they're not allowed to say, you'd think he would know that or she would know that, because they'll start saying it and halfway through they'll stop. Because I will always challenge somebody, you think they would know that. I said, how do you know? How do you know that they would know that? There's assumptions that we make as business owners. Oh, you think they would know that, right? So anyway, so he goes back the next day. I challenged him and he said, so why are you washing the rims? Oh, no, I thought just to make them look nice. He had never been explained that the reason he was cleaning them was to get the mud out so he could balance them. I mean, how simple is that? And now this kid gets yelled at by the boss. And if the boss wouldn't have been challenged by me, he may have gotten discouraged and quit. Whatever. I mean, this guy's a good guy. I mean, I'm sure they would have worked it out, right? But that whole piece, and I love it when people help me with that. I have a coach, Carm, Brenda. And there's days where she asks me questions and I'm like, I don't know how to do that. Or how does that work? And she'll walk through that with me, right? We all have these blind spots, in fact, she specializes in blind spots. So Lord help anybody that has Brenda coaching them.
Because she'll kind find them.
It's kind of uncomfortable when they're found, but they're feel good once you've solved them, right? So yeah, because I want people to know, listening to us, Carm, I want people to know that I am in your shoes, just in a different context.
You want to constantly sharpen your saw for your customer's saw, so you've got to get yours sharpened too. Jump back to EOS as you're talking about, you know, people's capabilities. It's called an EOS GWC, get it, want it, and have the capacity to do it. So your desire is wanted. And if the individual doesn't get it, they don't want it or have the capacity, then that person's in the wrong seat and you're going to have issues. Great, great. Control the things you can control so you can deal with the things you can't. And that, in my mind, is your next bullet point. The things that I can't control are things that I probably don't know how to control. I don't have the knowledge to learn how. I didn't study it. I didn't get good at it. And I need to have my who, I think. Who's going to do this for me, because I can't.
Yeah, exactly, Carm. But also from a standpoint of, I can't control the weather. I can't control geopolitics. I can't control pandemics. I can't control the city's decided to shut a road down for construction, right? And so then what ends up happening is our brain spirals into this negative space of what I can't control and how is it going to affect my business. And then I don't pay attention to what I can. So here's one really glaring example that I use all the time with my clients. Take a look at their numbers. So, buddy, you beat last year's January. Good. Well, last year's January wasn't that great in the first place. And you're not up to your average year to date this month. So I see it was a bit challenging. But let's take a look at your margins. Oh, look, your gross profit on parts went up 2 points. Brilliant. That's what you can control. You see, I can't necessarily control sales, car count. I mean, we can manage car count with good marketing and good stuff like that, but it's a lagging process, right? Whereas parts margin is a mindset and a pencil, rejigging your parts matrix. And so I'm always patting them on the back for controlling the things that they could control, right? As opposed to worrying about the rest of it that you can't. And then here's the other thing with human wiring and neurology and brain set, you know, this whole thing about why children get addicted to video games, it's the dopamine that they get from achieving the next level. So why don't we set ourselves up with next levels in our business and see what kind of, right, gamification, I think it's called these days, right?
It was actually Kent Bullard who was working on gamification inside of their coaching company. And I remember interviewing Kent, it may have been 2 years ago now, about gamification, and we never really took it to the next level. But, you know, I just wrote it down. I wrote down the words next level, because as much as it's under the gamification banner, you don't want to call it what we're doing is gaming, but you want to say, team, I have a brand new incentive bonus recognition program called The Next Level. And that lends itself to so many of the younger people that do work inside of our industry. Now, there's an awful lot of millennials that are brilliant. And I know owners that are so excited about having millennials on their team, but they have to be nurtured differently. And I love the concept, Murray. That could be another big takeaway here. Let's create programs called The Next Level, because inside it means something to many young people.
I agree with the millennials. There's a lot of really good, hardworking ones and welcoming into our world. Millennial shop owners that I work with and all of that. But in terms of when I serve people and serve clients, we all share certain traits. Doesn't matter if you're 62 or 35 or 22, right? I have a thing I developed years and years ago called SOAR. What is the situation? What is the outcome that you're looking for? What is the action you're going to take? And what is the result that you achieved? And you measure it, right? I began to notice owners stalling in their implementation. So here's an example. Shop owner and his wife needed to hire a service advisor. The numbers indicated advisor, glaringly advisor. Everybody in the room agreed they needed an advisor. Okay. Action plan is hire an advisor. Come back to the next meeting the next month later, no advisor. The next meeting, no advisor. So then I began to work my SOAR with them. I said, so what's the situation? We need an advisor. What's the outcome you would like? We want a person with 5 years experience. We want this ability, this background, and that kind of thing. Okay, so now what are the actions we're going to take? First thing we're going to do is we're going to create a positional agreement. So the positional agreement is let's describe what this position does, what the outcomes are required, right? We're not looking at a person, we're looking at a position, right? Describe that. So that's the first thing. Okay, now we've created that. That's done by next month. Next thing is to write advertisements for the position. Okay, so we've got that done. Okay, so 2 weeks later, we post those ads. 2 weeks later, we begin to take in resumes. And then in 3 weeks, we're interviewing people. So we broke down the step of hiring an advisor into its components. Because the couple were looking at me going, yeah, I know I need an advisor, but I don't know how to get one, is what they were telling me by not telling me. As soon as they got the positional agreement written, we celebrated and they felt good. Now they're motivated to do what? To write the ad. So again, the idea would be is if you imagine this as a video game, so you've got the gold coin for the ad. Now you've actually posted it on Indeed and LinkedIn and Facebook. So now you get another gold coin and your endorphins are kicked in and your dopamine's kicked in. And now, oh, look, we got some resumes coming in. Oh, shoot, I better call Marie on how to interview. Right. So then take a training class on how to interview well and then have an orientation piece and the whole bit of it. The next thing you know, they have an advisor. Right. So it's the idea of breaking down these big decisions, big things into their components, creating actions and then checking it and giving them timelines. And I mean, this goes back to SMART. A lot of wise stuff that's out there. It's just every once in a while, I think I have to rephrase it so it works for my brain. And sometimes I find that it works for other people's brains just because we're all different. Right.
They were hoping, they were wishing, they were dreaming, but they didn't really have any kind of action plans, any steps along the way.
You just reminded me of one of the biggest pitfalls of hiring employees in any industry, but our industry specifically, is I looked at the couple and I said, you've had an service advisor in the past, right? Yeah. And they were good. Yeah. And they left on good terms. I forget what the details were. I said, but they kind of fell in your lap, didn't they? And then the owner smiled. Yeah. I said, so what you're actually doing is waiting for the next advisor to fall in your lap. And that's what we do is we've had one good experience with a tech that fell in our lap or an advisor that fell in our lap. And so guess what happens is we keep thinking that we're going to duplicate that. And then we don't take any action and we don't have anybody. The people that actually are successful and have the billions and all that kind of stuff, they didn't just sit there. They actually took another step. The positive thinking was in taking a step, entrusting themselves that that step is going to work, entrusting that they're going to make mistakes, they're going to fix it. Like there's no such thing as easy under the sun, but there is magic in, oh, look, I advertised and somebody actually submitted a resume. Oh, look at that. Amazing, right? It actually works.
Murray Voth, RPM Training, always an honor to have you on. I love to just listen. I mean, I was as absorbed as I know our listener is going to be in all the great things that you're talking about. You excited me to think beyond me as just an interviewer, but you engaged me, man. You hooked me. This was good.
Oh, that's good. Awesome.
Thanks so much, man. Appreciate you being here.
Thanks for what you do. And I've always told people that you know how to draw it out of me. There's something about you that draws it out of me. So,
well, thank you. I appreciate that. That's a fine, kind compliment. Thanks, man.
Awesome.
Thanks for being on board to listen and learn from the premier automotive aftermarket podcast. Until next time.